You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Here, District, here in the house, I'm Marcus Johnson, joined by Chris Johnson. You know, we're covering everything Milwaukee Bucks related, all Bucks, all the time. This is a fantastic voyage. I'm the captain of this vessel, and man, we're just going to ride this thing until there are sparks flying out of the wheels. Just because we've ridden so hard, and this is how much we love Bucks and what this situation, which direction the situation is headed. So let's get into it.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
The Bucks started out a very difficult West Coast trip. And it becomes even more difficult when you keep it in context. And that context, Chris, is this. The first opponent on the trip, the Warriors, had just had their behind spanked by the Boston. So was that the worst loss in Steve? I know it was the worst loss, I think, in Steve Kerr's.
It was built to behind. I know that.
Yeah, like Patrick Beverly. I think it was Pat Beverly. I think we got to call Pat now. But that was one of the things he talked about, the belt to butt. That's what happened. This was the mindset. And look, you know, this. I'm thinking about the Golden State just franchise and tradition, recent tradition from the mid 2015, 2016 when they got it cracking. You know, and the Steve Kerr kind of era. And Mark Jackson, of course, got it headed in the right direction. And Steve actually came in and took it to another level. And so their tradition, their pride is still intact. It's major. I don't care what's going on, where they're ranked or where they're seated. They are still the Scruggamuggin Golden State Warriors. You know what I'm saying? They're still golden. When I walk into when I see Steph, when I see Clay, when I see Draymond, Kevon. Milwaukee.
No question.
High school. I see Kevon Looney with a 7'2". You know, I get filled with respect with this.
I love Loon, man.
But the organization, I mean, there's an aura that this team still has. And so to get spanked by the Celtics like they did, you knew they were going to come out like a wounded animal and that they were going to give the Bucks all they could handle. And they did. And the thing that impressed me, Chris, was the fact that Steve Kerr reads the scouting report, too. He reads the medical reports, saw that Giannis was questionable, I think. Sore Achilles coming into that game. So what do you do when you see?
You hunt.
The superstar. And you put on your track sheet. And, okay, you got a sore lower extremity. We're going to make
We are out. We are outie.
We've been on our flyers, you know.
We're gone.
Golden State had 9 fast break points in the first quarter. And you could see Kuminga was flying up and down the left wing and attacking right off the bat. They were attacking on makes and misses. I know Doc talked about the poor shot selection and the lack of balance. I mean, all that played into it. Don't get me wrong. But it was just Golden State. Their mindset was to make it a sprint, not a marathon.
But how do you combat that, Em? If you are playing against a squad whose strategy that day is to run you in the ground, what's the, you know, how do you combat that?
Well, I mean, conventional wisdom would say, you know, you try and maybe crash the offensive boards, but think about something. Golden State is the shortest team in the league on average, just over 6'5 is their average height. They're top 2 or 3 in defensive rebounding. So that gives you an idea of just how committed they are to boxing out, to having their quicker, smaller players chase down the long rebounds, do all the little things that it takes. I mean, they aggressively, not just box out, but aggressively keep you out of there, keep you from having an impact offensive rebounding. So it's easier said than done. To me, it comes down to, we touched on it before. We talked about the body blows and all that, but you've got to fight through whatever mental hurdle that may be presented and focus on just sprinting back every single time. Now, I'm not sure with Giannis's Achilles situation, I don't know if that impacted his ability to sprint back, but everybody, I thought, for the Milwaukee Bucks at one point in time or another, could have given a better effort in getting back. But again, that was Golden State's mindset. we're pushing, makes or misses. We're going to catch you off guard. We're going to get some easy buckets in transition. And that's what they did, and built the big halftime lead. And I give credit to the Bucks for battling back. But, I mean, this was a tough team and a tough situation and a tough venue with all the tradition and everything that's going on at the Chase Center for the Bucks to have to open up this West Coast trip.
Yeah, Bob was at the game. Bob did the game. So Bob Myers, former Warriors GM. So everybody was in the building. They honored him. There was a lot sort of at stake. I think there was a realization that the Bucks were coming in here hot. Golden State not only lost to the Celtics, got blasted, but there's also that deal of Milwaukee's coming to town. Dame is coming back to Oaktown or to San Francisco, to Bay Area. So, like, you know, there was a lot that was going on with the matchup, and everybody kind of came out with something a little bit extra, I felt like, on the Warriors side.
Yeah, and just to put a button on Bob Myers, like, I think it was his three daughters that gave him a point, and it was so touching.
It was awesome. It was beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life.
I cried like a little baby. He just got back home. My little daughter's giving me all this tribute and all this love. It was so much love in the building for him. That was good to see. That's your former running buddy at UCLA.
For sure, my guy. We actually went on a trip to Cabo. Hopefully, we can get him on the show so he can talk about it. But, Dad, think about this. You have a loss like that, right? And then you got to go play the Lakers.
Yeah.
talk about, though, the Bucks, that Lakers game, how they responded as far as getting blasted. I want to focus on the first half when they came out, how they looked. What did you see out there in the first half of the Lakers game as a response to getting blasted by the Warriors?
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, LeBron didn't play, and sometimes that can have an adverse effect on you just in terms of not letting your guard down, but psychologically feeling like we're in a much better position with him in the arms of Linda Rambis and Jeannie Buss.
on International Women's Day, no less.
International Women's Day with the shades inside, with about the five chains around the neck. You know, Goldie was in the house, boy. That was off the hook. Yeah. So, but look, D'Angelo Russell, man. I mean, 44 points. I mean, you know, they needed someone to have a huge game. I thought it might be AD. Gave us about 5 in Milwaukee a couple of years ago, and so I thought it might be AD. But D'Lo has played. D'Lo was taken out of the starting lineup. About 25 games ago, he was put back in. And going into that game, he was averaging about 23 points a game and shooting. This is the most important thing, shooting about 44% from the three-point line. So we know he's a floater master. And with the Bucks' drop defense, if you got a floater coming off that high ball screen and you can knock, that's the shot that the Milwaukee Bucks want you to beat them on. And in this game, you know, D'Angelo Russell with his 9 for 12 or whatever it was, 3-point field goal percentage. But his floater game would turn out to be the ultimate killer, especially down the stretch in the fourth quarter. So the Bucks came out ready to play. I thought they battled. I mean, Dame and Giannis, the synergy between those two guys and the fourth, man, I thought it was enough to win. When Dame hit that and-one-three, you know, woo! I thought it was Tiso tapping time. It was all over. That it was like it was this thing. But it was about 1:30 left, and I thought to myself, "That's too much time. That's too much."
Absolutely.
Fortunately, it was, and the Lakers were able to respond.
Yeah. In general, though, throughout the game, I think the Bucks had a lot of opportunities to take control of the game that were squandered. As far as defensively and stopping D'Angelo, you know, when you're watching the Bucks play defense against the Lakers and you think back to the winning streak and some of the tendencies and little nuances that they were executing during some of their best efforts, you saw there was a big difference, right? So now the communication, Beasley, Dame, Connington aren't as connected as they had been on these scramble switches and matchup rotation plays. I also noticed something that was interesting, and MJ, you tell me if you saw any of this. It seemed like defensively the Bucks were, the talk was happening a little later than it had been happening. So they were getting like confused, but the matching up was happening during the winning streak around three-quarter court. Now against the Lakers, about half court, right? Guys are just like you know, not knowing where guys are. They're a little late on matching up, and that affected some of the actions and how the switches were going. Something else I noticed with the Lakers in particular was all these actions that they're running on the screen and roll. So they're not just running, you know, a standard screen and roll. They're running like a screen and roll. Then, you know, Torian Prince is coming to screen AD's man. Then somebody's coming to screen his man. They were absolutely discombobulating the Bucks defensively. You could see the communication between the Bucks being a little iffy and guys getting confused on plays. I mean, I'm sitting there slowing it down. I'm on synergy. I'm watching it in slow-mo. I'm looking at guys, their mannerisms, their gestures. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. But those are minor things. You're on the road. No LeBron James, granted, but still, I'm high on the Bucks because I feel like these things that we're watching and these – easily correctable. No Middleton is one of my biggest things that I always just kind of sit back on and feel decent about whenever the Bucks lose a game moving forward. No mids. So it's like, okay, you know, we got to go back to the drawing board.
Well, games like this serve as a wake-up call.
Right.
You come out of the All-Star break 6-0. You have a great win against the Timberwolves. You go against the Charlotte a couple of times.
And they need that.
Chicago, you have a great spirited victory against the Lakers, beat the Sixers.
I'm sorry, but what's the fool's gold? Because you hear the national talking points. You heard, I know when our very own Lisa Byington was on the ESPN show, I know Malika Andrews had talked to her about just sort of the scheduling, the strength of schedule that the Bucks had out of the All-Star break. What's your take on that, Em?
Well, I mean, that's a valid point, but I love my partner, Lisa Byington, the way she responded. She came back on him talking about the 3-7 and how, you know, two or three of those games were without Dame. Chris missed about six of them. Brooke missed a couple of those. Giannis was hurt. Malik Beasley didn't get the mushrooms in his omelet like he liked. Bobby Portis had a hangnail. I mean, she's just throwing out some facts on him. It's way too many facts, but it got to the point where crew of the NBA Today show, those fabulous ladies that were hosting that day because International Women's Day, Becky Hammon and Ramona Shelbourne, that whole crew, they started supporting Lisa Byington. They're like, yeah, girl, yeah, them hangnails are good. Girl, he can get his arms. Girl, coaching is tough. No, but you know, of course, I jest. But they understood that
actually.
So this is what I mean by a wake up call. Because it looked like 6-0, okay, we're about to just come
Whoa.
Out. This is me. We're about to come out on this West Coast trip and just make a statement and prove a point and roll through the Warriors and roll through the lake. And it just reminded me something that Jason Kidd, the former coach of the Bucks, now with the Dallas Mavericks, used to say all the time. He told me a whole lot all the time. But he'd say, wins in this league are hard to come by. I don't care who you're playing. You know, from the best to the worst, it takes a level of focus and energy and effort and sustained focus, energy and effort. And the Bucks were in and out a little bit. You talked about the communication. That's all a part of that focus, that sustained focus. And so now I think this is a reminder of just how much of a connection there's got to be at both ends of the floor in order to get the kind of success that you want to get. I mean, the teams that are you know, 10 games over 500 or three or four games over 500 or 500 or lower. I mean, they can go in and out. If you've got championship aspirations, your whole thing has to be locked in at such a level at both ends. And the Bucks are not there yet. And that's the reality check for me. The Bucks are not there yet. Still a work in progress, which is totally understandable. You know, Doc is into the first 20 games or so of his tenure as head coach. And so it's heading in the right direction, but there's still a ways to go.
And you love to see the improvements, specifically the Dame Giannis evolution of their two-man game where we talked about running the Bucks the last 5 minutes. I mean, 7 out of 8 half-court possessions were buckets. They just didn't get it done the last two, but there's something to be said and to be gained from that type of cohesiveness.
Well, let me point this out, too. Let me give Darvin Ham his flowers, too, while he still can appreciate them. The actions that you talked about, those Laker actions. I mean, there was a stack screen that totally confused Pat Bev and Bobby Portis, who's supposed to switch where. And then I think it was Austin Reeves, I'm not sure, turned a corner. And now all of a sudden, Jay Crowder's got the help off of Jackson Hayes, I believe. And you know, foul or easy bucket inside. We saw a lot of that. So Darvin Ham, I thought, did a great job. And even that last play that you talked about with D'Lo, it started out with him matched up against Beasley's screen, him matched up against Dame's screen, him matched up now against Brooke because of a screen, and then Brooke and Dame a little slow in terms of stay or switch. We're not switching 1 through 5, we're switching 1 through 4. But in that situation, you know, maybe you make a change right then. But it was enough indecision for D'Lo to get Dame, you know, on his right side, and D'Lo was able to get to the floater spot and knock down a huge shot. So it's little things like that that make the difference between winning and losing. And those are areas that the Bucks are still a work in progress.
Are we attributing, because the Bucks were connected against these teams, the Clippers, the Minnesotas, the Charlotte, the Bulls, they were connected in those actions that we're talking about. They were processing the information quicker. They were processing the talk. They were processing the communication. Their bodies were moving. How do you make sense out of why the processing wasn't happening at the same rate as it had? Is this a competition thing? Is it because D'Lo and AD are in the building?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it too is, again, the level of players that you're playing against, and again, the coaching, that if you know a team is switching a lot, so now you're mixing in splits and splits, slips and slips and slips, and
ghost screens
and ghosts. I mean, D'Lo had a play against the Bucks zone, which had been really good against the Clippers, where he went up and the ball was on the left wing. He went up and back screened Giannis, and then before he even touched it, just slipped right in the middle of the floor, cut the ball in the paint, little float over Brooke. I mean, reacting. But it was scouting. It was understanding where the openings would be, and they had the athletes with those particular skill sets. Both the Warriors, you know, come on, Steph and Clay, the way they can shoot the basketball, Kuminga, the way he's coming on. And then D'Lo, you know, we saw, who was that? Jalen Brunson, I believe, 45 points. You know, there was a span of games against the Bucks in their drop defense when these guards were just killing the Bucks, 30 plus every single night. And D'Lo's one of those guys whose game is built to exploit the Bucks defense. So I think it's that combination. But I think, again, Darvin Ham and his staff deserve a lot of credit. The more you can scramble things up and confuse things and stack things up and have multiple screens on one possession, so now guys, you know, are talking but a little bit confused and hesitant about whose responsibility is what. I think we saw a lot of that in that game, and so now that's just a part of that processing, a part of the progress that has to be made. Look at that film, understanding how did they get us on this. What do we have to do? What do we have to do better next time to not be got again?
Em, I asked you a few episodes ago about Doc roster management, saving guys. I mean, stealing minutes. You know, making sure guys are healthy, saving legs, infusing some of the young energy in there, especially when you're playing against, you know, track meet type teams, etc. The bench unit with Gallo, Bev, PC, Bobby, you know, I wanted to believe in it for a while, and they did step up and they were making plays. But when you get to certain types of matchups, are they going to be able to be effective without playing AJ Green or Andre Jackson or any of these guys? Do they need to kind of, does Doc need to sprinkle in these guys a little bit? Or, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, second guess, but is there a place? Because AJ came in and absolutely hooped against the Clippers defensively, offensively. And I was just wanted to see kind of him build on that type of performance. What are your thoughts, MJ?
We're not trying to second guess. You're doing a hell of a job second guessing, my man. Listen, man, AJ Green, I was surprised he didn't play. He was 0-for-6, I believe, from the 3-point line in the game prior, the Golden State game. He had a nice little pull-up jumper, like a mid-ranger in that game. That was his only field goal. And so, I thought, and AJ, I like him because, as Doc always talks about, he battles on defense. And if you fight on defense,
we can help you.
He sent me a couple of clips of him defending Kawhi Leonard and James Harden, and he will battle you on defense, and we can help you if you battle. So that's another thing for this coaching staff to kind of figure out. But the one thing it does do psychologically, you don't believe that AJ Green is going to be in a redemptive mindset next time he steps on the floor, whoever that opponent is, he's going to guarantee you knock down the 3-point shots that he did knock down against Golden State. And so from that standpoint, you know, Doc is playing the long game, I think, with a lot of these guys, keeping them hungry, keeping them, you know, chomping at the bit, you know, just wondering if I'm going to get in, when I'm going to get in. Sometimes I get in, sometimes I don't, but I got to stay ready. You know, and as your Uncle Junior used to say, and they say Sugar Free said this, but it was Uncle Junior that said it first. If I stay ready, I ain't got to get ready.
Oh, my God. My Uncle Junior said that? He coined that phrase? All right.
Back in the 70s. Before I was there. I was there. He said it back in the 70s.
I don't know what was going on in the 70s. That's a whole nother podcast. We got to get a deep dive into the 70s, bro. Y'all was a trip.
Period. This first segment here, let's give our flowers to Dame Lillard passing Reggie Miller for what, fourth all time,
baby.
So the other guys, so Steph is number one, 3,000 and something. Number two, I think, is Ray Allen. Three, James Harden, I believe. And then Dame has moved into number. So the thing I appreciate about all these guys, really, but especially about Steph, about Dame. And James, to a certain extent, James Harden. But Reggie, do you remember Reggie at UCLA? Were you old enough to remember Reggie Raines? Reggie was
the deep three.
Footers back in the deep 80s. Three. And check this out. So Reggie's coming in as a freshman at UCLA. We're playing at the Witnesson. Nobody wants to pick him up because he's Cheryl's little scrawny brother. Cheryl is a better ball player than Reggie. That was a narrative back in those days.
Unbelievable.
I picked him on my team one day. Like, let me get this dude, this big-headed.
Good job, MJ. Way to go, MJ.
He turned it out with his shooting, but also his basketball IQ. So I've always been a big fan of his toughness because he was Cheryl's little brother. So he had to be tougher than everybody else. And he had that element, that great equalizer that you had, the Jader. He had that Jader, that deep Jader, as you call it, that people love, that terminology for a jump shot. He had the Jader. And so for Dame to surpass him is just another illustrious feather in that cap of Dame's that is full of a whole lot of great feathers. So congratulations, Dame Lillard.
Yeah, shout out Dame, man. It's the thing that's most incredible to me, and it's just real quick, it's just all, a lot of his threes have been off the bounce, and they're deep. Like, when you're Steph and Dame, like, to me, those two are in rarefied air and the type of shooters from deep that they are, because a lot of their stuff comes off of 2, 3, 4, 5 dribble combos, pulling up from 28, 29, 30, stepping back. I mean, there's like, that is some of the most impressive stuff I've ever seen, specifically Dame Lillard, and obviously Steph Curry.
Hey, next up, we have ESPN's Jamal Collier on Here District.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
All right, the Here District, we are privileged, let me put it that way, right, Chris? We're privileged to welcome in an esteemed writer for ESPN, the Midwest region, Jamal Collier. Jamal, how you doing today, man?
Man, that's too much. I'm it's an honor for me to be here with talking to y'all, man. How we doing?
I appreciate that. Give us an idea of what exactly you're doing with ESPN, the teams you cover, just so that people can get a little bit more familiar with what your beat is.
Yeah, so I'm the way we break it down is that some writers get regions of the NBA. So I am based out of Chicago, and I'm the Midwest is my region. Becomes focused mostly on the Bulls and the Bucks. Just some of that is just the driving distance of it. And, you know, the Bucks have obviously been on this run since Giannis emerged as the MVP he has, of just kind of one of the focal points of the team. So I bounce around a little bit throughout the Midwest, up to Minnesota, over to Detroit as well, in addition to those teams. But so the Bulls and Bucks are my main focus, my third season here in Milwaukee.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Malika Andrews may have held down that role for a moment. I used to see her in Milwaukee all the time. Something similar, correct?
Yeah, it's some big shoes to fill when I stepped into this role. So definitely feeling that pressure, right?
Facts.
Well, maybe you can parlay it like she parlayed it, bro. But she did pretty good after leaving the Midwest region.
But that you know, that's one you can't, that when somebody hits that jackpot on that slot, and it's like, man, you can't go pulling that same one in that same way.
You got to find a fresh, exactly. Listen, bro, I've introduced myself to you at the shoot around of the Warriors game a few days ago in San Francisco. And just in terms of what you saw from the Bucks in that game, and especially, let's stick with the positive first. I mean, that third quarter, I thought, was something for them to build upon. Just what did you see in that game, in the third quarter in particular?
Yeah, you know, that Warriors game was a weird one that I'm still not sure exactly what to process and what not. Like, I think the big thing is the Warriors, after losing to Boston, came out there with a fire. And especially in that first half, as you said, they jumped out on the Bucks. And obviously, 478 was in the first half. And you saw the Bucks settle in the third quarter and make a run. In a way that, just I think represents like the way you see good teams take a punch from a team and still know we're going to be able to take this, weather this storm, get back into it and make it a game. Now, ultimately, they weren't obviously able to close, but I just think kind of figuring out when things, they've had games recently where they just are coming out and they're sort of on the same page from tip and they play well the whole night, but on a night where things aren't going well, being able to kind of steer the ship and right the course, those are things that I think, especially since Doc has taken over, he's talked about, like, even on not really a game-to-game basis, but looking at the big picture, these are things that you can take with you and helps you in the playoffs, make sure the kind of team you want to be in the playoffs. So that's still what I think I'm taking away from that game. Is Warriors were really motivated, and the Bucks were able to sort of weather that and at least make a little bit of a run.
Jamal, how much different are these Bucks under Doc Rivers than they were under Dr. Adrian Griffin?
Yeah, significantly. And I think that it surprised me a little bit, considering it's only now been a 20-some-odd game, really only a month and change here, of him under there. And I think the big thing is that, the team direction – and the way, the style that they're playing, it makes sense for the personnel that they have. And it feels like they are getting to a place where you can see this being a team that can win a few rounds of the playoffs and win four rounds, obviously, is their ultimate goal. Just in the first half, there was almost never a stretch where you saw them and said, yes, they can do that and play well for four rounds in the playoffs and win a championship. And I think you have seen that, especially after the All-Star break, but even a little bit before, maybe that Memphis game aside, you just have seen that stretch of it where it's like, okay, and it hadn't even been all the way right, considering Chris Middleton, considering some other things. So I think that in and of itself is a pretty significant leap to make in a month.
And here's the thing, Jamal, that concerns me. And I agree with you in terms of, the differences between this team and this iteration and the pre-Doc version of the Milwaukee Bucks. These couple of games after the All-Star break, the Bucks played Charlotte, Chicago, and they did beat the Timberwolves right out the gate. A terrific game, well played from start to finish. The Clippers was a great testament to this team in terms of their resilience when they beat them at home, the way they played, and A.J. Green was just fantastic. Now, the thing that concerns me, Jamal, and I want your take on this. The Bucks, after a couple of games, after that nice 6-0 run, their defensive rating is dropped to close to the bottom of the league. Their opponent it's funny, Jamal, last week my son Chris asked me, did I think the Bucks were the most physical defensive team in the league? And at that moment, being a prisoner of the moment, I said I thought they were. Well, that didn't age very well because it did not age very well. But because Golden State, with all their movement and youth and Minga and Trace Jackson Davis and Moses Moody, I mean, these guys were flying up and down the court. Brandon Podzinski, a local Milwaukee Delafield St. John's Academy, the same school that produced Dwayne Johnson back in the early 80s, one of my favorite players out of New York. But I digress. What is going on? this Bucks defense, just the last few games, from what you're seeing compared to what they were doing. And I know the competition has a lot to do with it, but what are you seeing in terms of defensively in the most recent games from this team?
Well, that was going to be my point, the competition. And I think this road trip is really one that I've been obviously watching closely to see how they respond to, the higher competition. These West teams are good, and they're all sort of playing for a lot in their positioning in the playoffs. And, you saw defensively really in that Lakers game where the way D'Angelo Russell got loose and got in the middle, I actually mistakenly said at some point post-game referred to him as Brunson. And I think I just had a flashback of that Jalen Brunson just like in the middle of the paint, lighting them up, kicking everything right in the middle of that drop. And I share your same concern that you almost had that revert back, it felt like, to where the team was a few months ago. And again, it's going to be about also Russell hitting, 9 threes and really just kind of got into a groove in a way that, and it was a career night for him. I think that coming, as I said about the Warriors loss, I'm still processing what to make of it, because if they show up, within the rest of the trip and can finish off strong, it could change maybe, how you feel about it, like how this team responds to it. But I think, you have seen a little bit of, even though the defense is going to be better, perimeter defense and like you said, the physicality out there, that part of it is always going to be sort of just as one of the baked-in flaws of the roster. And how they respond to that, react to that, and sort of counter that when teams are making a run, it's just going to be kind of worth watching, because there's still good guards, a lot of good guards in the league and a lot of good guards coming up on their schedule. I think the book's still out. I'm not necessarily ready to back off. I didn't make the claim as you did as far as best physical defense yet, but – I do think that they have turned a corner to be, at least a point of above average, if not a good defense. And, again, that part is like a big, big change from where they were a couple of months ago.
Jamal, what do you attribute to the Bucks' slippage defensively these last two games? Rewatching the film, there were some mistakes mentally, as far as communication was concerned, some positioning deals. Like, what do you think is the root of that, and why did they go through the lull on such an important road trip?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think, again, some of it seemed to be, especially in the Warriors situation, like that was such a unique team to what they have been playing, and I think that really bothered them and got them out of their it got them out of the rhythm and the comfort zone that they had been in defensively. I have not looked exactly at how D'Lo Russell continued to get, open and get some space. But, I think another thing is, naturally when LeBron James is not in the game, your sort of mentality in that game sort of changes. And I wonder how that affected them. I don't know. I don't know if I have a good answer for it. And I kind of keep saying this, that was it a blip? Was it the Warriors really being motivated? Did Russell just have a career night? It's sort of easy to write those things off at the moment. And, their challenge is going to be a week from now, 2 weeks from now, making sure that these things didn't stack up. And now you're in another kind of defensive lull. And I think that's the challenge for Doc and the coaching staff now, is to say, okay, teams are starting to counter what we're doing, and we're getting out of whack. We're being able to force us out of whack a little bit more here. And, why is that, and how do we correct it? And, I'm curious what you guys think about, like, sort of how Patrick Beverley, with, I think there was a big topic about his usage and how he factored in, so should he been out there more at the end of the game. Like, yeah, I'm curious to see how Doc pushes that button and how he uses him, as a compliment on defense, late game closing lineup.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to watch. And this is what we're all about, man. We're just watching how this thing unfolds. I call it the Fantastic Voyage because of the talent at Doc's disposal and just how he chooses. Doc's been around the game 24 years as a head coach. He's forgotten more than a lot of us will ever know. And so I've got complete faith that, you know, he's going to try and figure things out. But in that vein, talking about some positive stuff now, number 34, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, he's trying to become the first player to drop 30 and shoot over 60% from the field. He's got a career high in assists this year. He's making some really not only timely passes and great reads on offense, but the flair that he is distributing the basketball with is just really a beautiful thing to watch. MVP, Eric Name, we had him on last week. Mm-hmm. He thought that it would be tough for Giannis to get some serious consideration based on a lot of factors. Your thoughts on Giannis, and does he have a snowball's chance in hell in your mind to win the MVP award for the regular season?
Man, he's having such a fantastic year. And, you know, I am glad that there has been people, you know, recognizing it because, you know, like you said, 30 points on 60% shooting, his passing, his playmaking is a lot better. And I think it's important to, you know, amidst all the things that have gone on with this team over these past few months since the start of the season, the fact that they're into this position, you know, number one on that list is because of Giannis and the play, you know, the way he has played. I agree with Eric as far as, you know, looking at where things have stood, and we do a straw poll at ESPN, a straw poll of voters across the league that my colleague collects to sort of, you know, show where the things stand on the MVP. And Giannis was a pretty distant third, not in a way that he doesn't, I don't think, have a chance, but to make up the ground in these last, you know, under 20 games now or so of the season to go, you know, I think would be difficult. And I think, you know, I think it's less about, you know, people's aversion to voting for Giannis or aversion to Giannis, and more about some of the things. And I think there's a little bit of the newness to Shea especially, but Shea also having really a special season for the Thunder, and that team, you know, a team full of 20-year-olds winning the West as competitive it is this year would be, I think, a pretty impressive accomplishment. And then, you know, Jokic as well continues to kind of put up some of the same numbers coming off winning a championship. So I think those guys are having really, really good seasons, and I think that's why people have gravitated toward them. But, you know, the headlines and the top things that people have heard out of Milwaukee this year have largely not been about Giannis' play on the floor. And, you know, that I think is people shouldn't overlook that because he has been consistently, you know, dominant every single night and keeping this team afloat despite whatever is going on or whatever, you know, defensively or off shooting or whatever the sort of things are around it. The fact that this team is in position and we can even, you know, talk about them being in a chance to challenge for a championship. And that's all on the back of 34. And that ultimately, when you talk about most valuable, like that is the sort of tenor of the award. I'm curious to see how it'll play. I don't think this award is good in anybody's mind. It's certainly, I don't know if I'm going to be in the voting pool this year, but I think he certainly has a chance.
Yeah, and I think leadership, I mean, and you touched on it.
Yeah.
Oh, so I don't mind, you know, Giannis speaking up, speaking out. When he talked about we've got to be better from the equipment manager to the coaches, and we know what he was talking about at that time. That's a part of the package, right? I mean, it's not just shut up and dribble. If you see something that needs to be addressed, you got to address it as the team leader, as a leader, not only of this franchise but one of the leaders of the NBA. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's been interesting as an observer just watching, you know, Giannis is the way he is, you know, has evolved into the command and the lead of a franchise. And I think it's still sometimes, you know, his words and his actions carry weight, carry power. He's talked about this before, like the burden sometimes of that, you know, that he does not want, you know, people's lives to shift based on his, you know, demeanor and his words, but I also think that he's conscious and aware of when he is sort of saying things and making a point of what the reaction or what that will be. But I think that that is, again, that's what you want from your best player. You want him, and especially the guy who is showing up every night and playing, you know, playing his hardest and playing, you know, a hard share of minutes and on both ends of the floor. And really sort of like in an example way, he's showing up, he's giving it 110%. He's the guy that, you know, somebody put it to me recently. It's just like, you don't have to show up. You don't have to go to the locker room and wonder, is he going to be ready to play today? Barring injury, obviously, right? But, like, is he going to be locked in or ready to actually, like, show up and compete and win? The answer is yes, every single night. And that is a special thing, especially, you know, considering just the league today and considering the environment of players today. Like, that is still a singular skill and force for Giannis that he has, I think, above really anybody else.
Jamal, how would you assess the way that Giannis and Dame's relationship on the court has evolved under Doc Rivers versus Adrian Griffin?
Yeah, you know, one of the things Doc has said that I find most interesting coming out of the break, and you know, I'm hoping to write about this at some point here soon, but, you know, Doc has said that basically we may have to force it a little bit, you know, almost like overrun. Everybody came into the season obviously wondering, you know, about this sort of raw pick and roll numbers. So they just do it 100 times or whatever that would be. And obviously the numbers under Griffin were not always there. They were doing different things sometimes to play off each other, but just ultimately not really interacting with each other as much as you would expect in the first half. And I think what I would be curious for the rest of the season is will we see Doc almost just like spam, you know, just hammer that button and just like, just keep going to it, keep going. So we saw it a little bit in the end of that Lakers game, especially they really played well off each other. And that was one of their best performances, playmaking, setting their teammates up, setting each other up. And, you know, I would expect to see more of that and see it continue to evolve. And again, sort of thinking about what Doc was saying, it's like, these are things, even if individually, and to the point we made where we started off with about how what's the concern level on these losses, seeing the way Giannis and Dame played in the end of the LA game and the way that those guys were able to play off each other, that's a big win. You know, like if you can keep that button and keep that going uphill, ultimately, sure, yeah, you want to win the game, but like, man, that's what's going to win you four playoff rounds. And that's the kind of thing that I think is going to be most important for this team in the next 15 to 20 games.
Now, you were doing a deep dive into, I believe, kind of what type of actions Doc was trying to use based on getting Dame comfortable, maybe using some of the Portland stuff. Have you posted that up yet? Are you still working on that? Or is there anything you can share with us in terms of where that is right now?
You know, I'm still working on it, and one of the things I'm hoping to get, you know, coaches and people don't always like giving out exactly what their plays are, so that's the hurdle I'm trying to trying to navigate a little bit. But you know, I can say that we're trying to figure out a little bit like some more specifics of when, how they have started incorporating those things. I think a couple of things that I've noticed and have, you know, talked to folks and have seen is that the way Dame likes those screens, basically right when he gets, you know, across half court, setting them way high off the floor, like higher up the floor. I think that's one thing that they have started doing that a little bit more frequently to set him up. And, you know, Dame has talked about why he sort of likes allowing, like getting the defense to react sooner. He can read the defense better and such. So there's some small things like that. I think it hasn't shown up in some of the data a lot of, at least yet, as far as like how heavy or when they're going to it. So I'm still keeping an eye on exactly the trends of when they're doing certain things. But I think for Doc, like there's definitely for Doc, it's something that he has emphasized that we have to make sure that Dame, you know, is feeling comfortable and feeling, you know, 100% settled in for the playoffs and for that run. So I think that's something that he's been going to this second half and his last stretch of games, you know, within mind.
I'll tell you, Jamal, it's one of the things I miss about Jason Kidd. He would give up way too much information. I'd be like, Jason, you're not supposed to be telling me all this, man. You gotta keep some of this under wraps, bro. But yeah. He was really open and sharing, man. But listen, man, We appreciate you coming by the Here District. I mean, just a fantastic guest, all these great insights. And, you know, we'll see you around, and we would love to have you on again, man. And thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your day to join us here, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson at the Here District.
Hey, we appreciate you guys. I appreciate you guys for having me. Let's hope that we got some stuff to talk about here the next couple of months. We can do this again.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
Remember, send us questions on Twitter at Bucks Plus Audio, at Old School 888, that's me, and at Point Forward Pro, that's Chris, or email Here District at Bucks.com. Holla! And, well, you know, maybe we'll hold it for next week. I wanted to maybe touch on the AJ Green nickname.
Which one do you like? Because, I mean, look, I heard a few, right? Or do you want to hold that for next week? What do you want to do, Em?
Touch on it. Because, you know, a good friend of mine, Michael Scarberry, who was the top writer.
Shout out Starberry.
Shout out Michael Starberry. You know, he in Milwaukee. He grew up, you know, a stone's throw from Five Star Forum and in the projects, the Hillside Projects in Milwaukee near the Hillside Boys Club. That's where he played ball on a daily basis. But he lives in Minnesota now. But he shot me a nickname for A.J. Green. He said, Dairy Bird. Milwaukee's the dairy state. So Dairy Bird. So I threw it out there. Now, Lisa, my Emmy award-winning play-by-play partner, she came up with AJ Automatic.
And okay. So
there was a bit of a Twitter thing, X-Twitter, whatever.
Brouhaha, brouhaha.
You said you heard another nickname that caught your eye, right?
Pale Ellis. And it was a guy on Twitter that called AJ Pale Ellis, P-A-L-E Ellis. I mean, Pale Ellis, come on, y'all. Yeah. It does not get better than Pale Ellis, okay?
At some point, I think we're going to have a survey or something where everybody can kind of chime in. But listen, my point is this, that I was just, because Michael Starberry, this great writer, Ava DuVernay, When They See Us, he was an Emmy-nominated writer, When They See Us. He's got a like a multi-picture deal or something at Netflix. I mean,
he wrote Legends of Chamberlain Heights with Joe, right? At Comedy Central, and they did that whole thing.
Legends of Chamberlain Heights with Josiah, Colin Kaepernick and Black and
White. My brother Josiah, for those out there that don't know, my brother Joe.
Colin Kaepernick and Black and White, he wrote most of those episodes. So, you know, so I got, just out of respect, and hopefully maybe he'll like one of my projects and we'll, you know, funnel it toward Netflix or something. But that's beside the point. But Michael Starberry came up with that nickname. I'm not married to it. I mean, it's kind of corny, Dairy Bird, but, you know, what do you like?
But we need to do a poll. So we need to do a poll. I don't know if it's through our Twitter. Maybe we're going to set you up with a poll, MJ, and we're going to give our fans.
Lisa talked about doing something too.
Let's tag Lisa. Let's bring it in. Let's collab. We're going to collab with Lisa. We'll get this poll going. We're going to find out from Bucks fans what nickname for AJ Green they prefer. There's some good nicknames out here right now, man. Have you seen the kid? Real quick, this is a little off topic. Have you seen the kid at Indiana State with the goggles? He looks like George Mike, and his name is Robbie. They call him Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But listen to who else they call him now. They call him Larry Blurred, Larry Blurred, as in blurred because he wears goggles. Yes, I think that might be the sickest nickname I've ever heard in my life. Larry Blurred.
That's it.
Blurred.
So listen, fans, we got a whole lot to play with, and. You know, the Here District, man, we just having a good time. We're having fun, and we're having fun kind of watching the evolution of this Milwaukee Bucks basketball team, both the good and the bad. So, you know, you got to take the good with the bad, and that's what we do around here. We call it like we see it. We keep it 100, as they say. So, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, be back.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.